Welcome to tonight's episode of Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Ruth Ann.
And I'm Robert.
And we're delighted to have with us again this evening a very special guest, and we'll get to him in just a moment. First, I'd like to remind everyone about our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You can listen to all of our past shows there for free, and you can also find us on iTunes by searching Well-Rounded Corners. If you've subscribed to us on iTunes, all new shows automatically download to your computer or iPod within 48 hours of broadcast. You can also listen to us in the archives of our BBS radio page, or live every other Tuesday on BBS Radio Channel 1.
Absolutely. And as Ruth Ann said, we are welcoming back a guest. We have Courtney Brown, PhD, with us. We spoke with him, it wasn't the last show, it was the show before that, and we were talking with him about remote viewing. He is a mathematician, a social scientist. He teaches at the Department of Political Science at Emory University in Atlanta. He is the leading scholar on the subject of remote viewing, and is done using procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes, or procedures that were derivative of those methodologies. Courtney, it's wonderful to have you with us again. We're so glad.
Robert and Ruth Ann, I'm very pleased to be invited back. I have to add a little bit to the intro that I do not do the remote viewing research at Emory University. I do only applied mathematics and other courses at Emory. What I do the remote viewing research at is at the Far Sight Institute, which is independent of my work at the university.
Right. I believe I forgot that last time, and I forgot it this time as well. So,
it's okay. An
important distinction, absolutely.
Well, it's important because the academy, which is all colleges and universities, has not yet embraced the idea of remote viewing. And they're in a state that's uncomfortable because 15 to 20 years ago, everybody was laughing. And now nobody's laughing. And in the old days, 15, 20 years ago, people used to think I was deluded. And that the military people that were doing this were just off on a bender. But now nothing happens. Nothing like that. Everybody is totally silent. There's nobody laughing. It's one of those OMG, oh my gosh moments. Where they're looking at something that's not going away, and deep inside they know they're going to have to confront this reality. But in the meantime, while that's happening, I want to make sure that I keep everything separate between my university work and my remote viewing work until the universities worldwide reach out and say, okay, they're ready, they are feeling the comfort level. They're ready to sort of embrace this. Remember, it wasn't until the 1930s that the first course on gravity occurred. And I believe it was at Princeton. And the professor had to apply to teach the course on gravity. Now, this is gravity. No one really doubted that gravity existed. So this is a situation. Universities are, in general, resource aggregators, and they are not paradigm busters. It's individuals, people, who are paradigm busters. Yes. And there's always a lag time between when new discoveries are made and when they are embraced by the mainstream. And so we're in one of those moments now, and almost always the new discoveries go through a process of being laughed at in the beginning, and then a period of dead silence, that's what we're in now, to a period of, you know, everyone running for it saying, oh, I was a supporter back in the old days. I mean, that's the way it happened with prions. If you remember, there was a mm-hmm. scientist out of California who discovered that prions were the source of mad cow disease. And everybody laughed, and literally, after that happened, nobody invited him to conferences, or almost nobody. I mean, he was the guest unwanted. The phone just never rang. It was just dead. And then the Nobel Prize Committee finally said, okay, let's call an end to this. You folks in the mainstream don't have to accept it if you want, but it's true anyway. So we're giving him the Nobel Prize. at that very moment, he became mainstream, and the phone ran off the hook, and everybody in the whole world was saying, "Great, you're one of us. This is great." And that's the way it works in academia. So we're in one of those waiting to exhale moments, but at least we're past the name calling and the deluded calling and stuff like. Now they're in the silent, oh my God. You know, it's never a good idea to bet against a smart person who never backs down. It's always a bad bet.
Yes. Well, look what happened to Copernicus. I mean, you know, all he had to go through. Or Galileo. Maybe I'm mixing the two up.
Galileo suffered a death threat, but yes. Both of them had the same types of problems. You know, with Copernicus, it was an interesting situation because he was saying that the Earth revolved around the sun. And it was Galileo who confirmed that with really solid observations. But Copernicus was basically responded to at the time by saying, "This is crazy. If the Earth was revolving around the sun, just look, we'd feel it. I mean, we're standing still here. I don't feel anything moving. We're not swooping." They were thinking like centrifugal force and stuff. So mm-hmm. The problem with Copernicus's day was that they didn't yet have Newton. So they did not know that force equals mass times acceleration. And all of classical mechanics came out of that one equation. And so in those days, they didn't know, because of a huge lack in understanding of the physics, that they would not feel it if they were orbiting the sun. And that's what we're in right now, where academics are originally saying anyone who thinks about remote viewing is deluded, but they didn't understand the physics of it. And it's only now that the physics of it is becoming understandable. I was out at the University of Colorado at Boulder over the summer, and at Boulder, Colorado, at the Society for Scientific Exploration meetings, I gave a talk on the physics of remote viewing, how it can actually work, explaining literally how it works on the level of quantum mechanics up to the macro.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, it was an accessible talk, though, that everyone could understand. And that talk was recorded.
Wonderful.
And see it now, or not right this moment, but, you know, I finished the interview first, and then you can see it. You can see it on the website for the Farsight Institute, which is www.farsight.org. That's FARSIGHT, like seeing far, .org. And if you scroll a little bit down on the homepage, you'll see an embedded video, big one, saying remote viewing and quantum science. And that's the recording that took place in Boulder this summer. And that'll give you an idea of the mainstream connectivity. Also, for some of your listeners may be interested, they'll be saying, well, this, if this stuff was real, we'd have peer-reviewed research. Well, we do. And on that same homepage, sort of closer to the top, you'll see a brown banner saying latest peer-reviewed published research. And if you click on it, you'll see an article that came out this year in a mainstream peer-reviewed scientific journal called the Journal of Scientific Exploration. And that dealt with an experiment that we did with respect to time and the existence of multiple realities, parallel universes. And it's fascinating. And so you get to see the stuff we do. So that's why no one's laughing anymore. I mean, I've spoken. No one teaches remote viewing at the university, but I've spoken at universities all over the place. I was even a keynote speaker at a group of Nobel's physicists at Lucerne a few years back. It's a situation that is delicious because of the pregnancy of the moment. And so I'm really enjoying this moment. In fact, I'm enjoying this moment more than I will likely enjoy the moment, although I probably will enjoy all moments. But that moment when finally some elements of mainstream science recognize the reality of remote viewing, and then sort of pandemonium, you know, the phone starts ringing off the hook, and, you know, reporters outside my house camping out.
Well, every documentary will have you, segments of you talking about, you know, this.
And yeah, that. Yeah.
And as
back
it should.
Before.
I mean, that's, yeah.
Actually, you know, this is really great. These interviews here that we are having are actually really valuable for the historical record.
Yes.
And when that moment comes, and it will come, and I do not think it will be very far into the future, that these interviews will be really, really valuable. I'm not talking monetarily, although perhaps they will be, but in terms of the historical record, I'm really grateful that you've invited me back to speak about these topics.
Well, you know, as we talked about last time, a lot of our discussion talked about 2012 and 2013 and the climate, the global climate issues that you saw. And maybe global climate's not the right way to say it, but definitely there were some cataclysmic type changes that are coming, and according to your work.
Those are perceived post 2012 Earth changes.
Right. Okay. That's a good way to put it. You talked about that mainstream science, it either will come around to seeing this, and really accepting it, or you'll be proven right not that you really need any more proof, but if there's someone out there that still needs proof, they're probably not listening to our show, but if there's someone out there that still needs proof, when these changes do take place, and so many of us feel that this is how it is, there's so many, you have psychics saying this, you have remote viewing people saying this, you have intuitive people, you have the Cliff Hyes web bot work, you have all these different channels are basically saying the same thing. And I don't think it's that there's this mass plagiarism going on. I think we all feel something big is coming. And, if that is what it takes, if that kind of brings us to the forefront, then I guess that's good and bad in ways, because obviously no one wants to go through that.
It's a good thing. Robert and Ruth Ann, it's actually a very good thing, because the post 2012 Earth changes study that we did and talked about in our last interview, those are the only hard data that exist that were collected using an absolutely impeccable scientific randomization procedures that clearly indicate something's coming. Now, the most important thing that you want to recognize is that over the last 6 years when we've been doing these projects, I've been working with people like Glenn Wheaton, who runs the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild and all of his remote viewers, and he's out of Special Forces Intelligence, and also Lynn Buchanan, who has trained a large number of remote viewers in procedures known as controlled remote viewing, or CRV, and Lynn Buchanan is out of Defense Intelligence Agency. Both Army, but still different branches of the Army. And of the studies that we've done over the last six some odd years, we've not been wrong, I mean totally wrong, in a single one of them. So we've really had a really good track record. We finally understand the remote viewing phenomenon well enough now to be able to do these demonstrations and to do these experiments reliably, regularly. There was one experiment that was probably our most seemingly off, but it actually led to a huge set of experiments called the Multiple Universes Experiments that were just recently published in that peer-reviewed journal I talked about. And that was an experiment which we sort of accidentally targeted in remote viewing with these military-grade remote viewers who had, a huge accuracy, public track records, and also we did, they've had, practice, public verified practice over like 10 years working with these military or military-derived procedures. And there was we were perceiving, remote viewers were perceiving what we were thinking was a large earthquake in Los Angeles. And the data seemed to suggest it was a major magnitude earthquake that was going to hit sometime in the second half of 2000. And let me see, I think it was 2007. Or was it 2009? I can find that out really quickly. But I'll tell you in a second, because that is sort of 2008 it was. Yes, it was 2008. And the results of that experiment led me, and I'd never analyzed earthquake data before with remote viewing, so it led me to make a probability graph based on the results themselves, indicating that the most likely date for the earthquake in Los Angeles was going to be the last few days in July, like July 29th. That was dead center on where the graph was. And we published that well in advance, months in advance, and I talked about that at the meetings in numerous places around the country, scientific meetings. And so there was not a secret that was what was perceived. Well, sure enough, on July 29th, the exact day that we predicted based on those remote viewing data, there was a 5.8 magnitude earthquake in Los Angeles. Now, that was way smaller than the devastating earthquake that we picked up with our remote viewing data. So the magnitude was less, but it was still a very significant earthquake, and it was on the exact day. Within a six-month window, it was on the exact day that was the most probable. So we hit it directly on. And that led me to thinking more about the idea that there were multiple realities and that on that day there would have been another version of Los Angeles that did experience a much larger earthquake and other versions of Los Angeles that would have experienced almost nothing. So we were sort of in the middle. And then we conducted a year-long multiple universes experiment to test that hypothesis of multiple realities. And that's what was published in the Journal of Scientific Exploration, a peer-reviewed major scientific journal, confirming the a priori hypothesis overwhelmingly that we do live in a situation of multiple realities. Now, that raises a whole lot of questions about the physics of that, but it nonetheless is, that was the most sort of, you might consider, off remote viewing experiment we have done in the last several years. And that wasn't off at all. So we actually nailed it and have an interpretation for why the magnitude was less. That was later confirmed in a year-long project that was eventually published in a peer-reviewed major scientific journal. So, you see, we've not really been wrong ever in these studies that we've been doing, in terms of, like, you know, like you hear a lot of, sometimes you hear of someone making a prediction and then it doesn't come true, and then they make another prediction and it doesn't come true. Well, in our work, we've got a really great track record. Also, we are not in the business of making predictions. We are in the business of doing public experiments that the public can verify the data collection process using various encryption methods that we do. We involve tens of thousands of people, volunteers all over the world who participate and verify that the data were collected under totally squeaky clean experimental conditions. And then we devise our experiments such that the results, when they eventually come out, can be verified by the public. And people see all of the data. They know the remote viewers, they know the track history of the remote viewers, they know the styles of remote viewing that we are using, and so everything's public. So if you come from Missouri and you are skeptical, the show me state, this is the place to be, because we love people from Missouri. We don't want anyone to ever say that we do something in secret and then say, believe me, trust me. You should never trust science. Science and trust have nothing to do with each other. Science is simply a set of procedures, a set of experiments, a set of theories, a set of hypotheses. And the idea that scientists sometimes do with they go into their laboratory, do something in secret, and then come out and say, trust me, this is the results I got, that's just stupid. We don't do that. And so, you know, we have a really good publicly verified track record, and which is why nobody's laughing anymore. If we didn't do this, we're the only major science venue anywhere that does these major studies, the whole public participation in the data collection verification process. So that's why no one's laughing anymore. If it wasn't for the stuff that all of the people that work here at the Farsight Institute, all as volunteers, then we wouldn't be in one of those waiting to exhale moments right now. But that's where we are, and it's really exciting. This is the really most exciting time I've ever been in.
Well, that's why we ask you back, because, well, not only is this fascinating, but because the way you approach it is not in, well, we'll just do it and take our word for it. It's very scientific, and it is, your approach is, and you're not asking people to take your word for it. And I have been, looked on your, Farsight, website, you know, several times, and I have some questions for you relating to some of the training and some of the uses and special interests and so forth. But I believe it's about time for us to take a break. And
we're going to go ahead and take a break now. We get back, we definitely want to touch on that. Courtney was going to talk to us about the experiments that the Farsight Institute did in regards to remote viewing Mars and what was going on that planet that's in the news so much. So we'll be right back in a moment with Courtney Brown.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more, or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com, or call 1-800-672-8415.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system. And Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as La Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's alabamareiki.com.
And welcome back. And we are talking tonight again with Courtney Brown, and we are talking about remote viewing. And I have some questions I wanted to ask you. I'm on your Farsight website, and I had, of course, looked for the training. And so I see that there is a section on this is a great website, by the way. I hope everybody will go and look it over. But there was one section on special interests, and then there's a section on medical applications. And I got all excited when I read that, because I do energy work, and I used to work in a hospital and assisted with autopsies. So I have two different ways of looking things that really go together. And the thing that happens with me when I work with people is I get a picture of what they look like your liver or your whatever. And I know that sounds bizarre, but that's just, you know, that's things are what they are. And so when I read this about medical applications, this sounded fascinating to me, because I had never thought of it, you know, and maybe that's not what you're talking about here. I wanted to ask you about these special uses and specialization, how that works for them.
Yeah, let me ask you, I'm now sort of a little bit confused about where you saw the medical stuff. I think you were probably clicking around in the stuff called
the courses.
the CRV training and stuff like
yes,
that?
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was interested in it. And I saw under the, I believe it was the postgraduate. Yes, it was a postgraduate, and it was the controlled viewing courses.
And okay, let me explain. The controlled remote viewing links in mm-hmm. the navbar, the CRV links, they open up to a new web page because those are links to Lynn Buchanan's website.
Oh, okay.
And Lynn Buchanan does the training in CRV as compared with the HRVG, which is a Hawaii Remote Viewer Guild. I work with Lynn and Glenn Wheat in HRVG so much we have the links right on the nav bar so that people can connect up with them. But we don't do medical stuff experiments at the Farsight Institute. That's
right.
Something that Lynn Buchanan's been working on independently. And there's a reason for that, and that's why I wanted to mention this. At universities, the big money right now is in medical mm-hmm. stuff. And they don't want anybody messing with the money flow, the cash cow.
Yes, that's true.
And so I have very carefully kept all of the work that's done at the Farsight Institute free of medical stuff.
Yes.
Because
I can understand that.
We have freedom of speech. I have, tenure and, and academic freedom and so on. But I don't push it. If you start dealing with,
I totally understand that.
if I start putting medical stuff on the Farsight Institute's website, then the huge financial resources of universities would be aiming their guns at us, and I don't want that to happen. So I keep that away from at the university. I keep that away from the stuff. Even though we're totally independent from any university, mm-hmm. I keep that away just so that, I mean, they have so much money I just don't want to mess with people who have that much money and are willing to spend it to defend whatever. So I just stay away from that. Yeah.
I guess I just, when I saw that description, it just clicked how amazing that would be. So I had to ask.
Yeah,
but
Lynn is very interested in stuff like that. And a lot of people who do remote viewing are very interested in stuff like that. And I am also very interested in stuff like that. However, I keep away from it personally, and I keep the Farsight Institute away from it precisely so I don't, I let sleeping dogs lie. It's basically
something else that you're doing. That's not your point right now. I mean,
that's right. We're doing something else also.
And I saw a section in the same page, which is her page, for people who naturally did these types of things, and there was something for them too. And so I totally understand why you would focus on what you're trying to accomplish now, and the other things will come when it's their time.
What we're really trying to do is to prod significant elements of mainstream science to simply recognize the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon. Now, for those who want to know procedures and are on a very limited budget and can't train with either the CRV folks or the HRVG people. There's a free course that's very long, extensive, 18 hours, 24 lessons, hosted by YouTube on our website. And you click on the SRV link in the website, and you'll get a free printable text. Course that's hosted by YouTube, and it's all free, and it's probably almost everybody who starts studying remote viewing starts with that course.
That's very important. Courtney, I just want to just make a special note. We're going to link this specific link to this course. We're going to link that in the article or in the post for the show. But I just want to remind listeners, farsight.org, click on SRV, and then the course, the free course is on that SRV page. Is that not?
Yes.
And it's extremely popular worldwide. And it's the reason we have it up there is one of the, and it's been up there for as long as I can remember, but the reason we have it up there is because one of the initial complaints about remote viewing research was that it was a money scam.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to a long, long time ago, I don't even remember how long ago, just to give it away, a complete free course that's really long. Wonderful. It's not like an hour, but it's 18 hours, 24 lessons, plus a printed text, printable text. Wow. I mean, it works. And plus a lot more stuff. I mean, there's tons of stuff that we have up there. And the reason we did it was to completely get the financial issue away. Now, the HRVG people typically don't even charge for remote viewing instruction. And the SRV course is free, and it's extremely popular. So, it's, you know, when we started doing that, we did it as a resource for the entire remote viewing community. So even if somebody was training and charging courses, charging something for it, they didn't get criticized anymore as a money scam because our course was up there for free. So it was sort of a way to protect the entire remote viewing community.
And you know, it being on YouTube, I'm on the page right now, and it being on YouTube, this whole playlist, you know, people can listen to this on their computers, their cell phones. Most things have YouTube viewers now. So 18 hours, I mean, I do like your disclaimer that you need to be 18 years of age and of sound mental health to use these materials. I like that.
There's a reason for that. We have a disclaimer on all of our materials, and the reason for that is remote viewing would work very well with a young person, but we do not want young people to do it. And the reason is when people are in high school, when young people below the years of 18, they should be focusing on schoolwork to get into college, and they're very easily distracted. Mm-hmm. So we don't want that to happen. We want people to stay on track, get into college. The last thing we want young people to say is, oh, well, look, there's a larger reality out there. So what school? It's not so important. They don't even know this is cool. This is more important. I'm not going to study anymore. We don't want that to happen. So until they are a little bit more mature to handle the responsibilities of life and to sort of dive into remote viewing stuff, 18 years or older, we really don't want them doing remote viewing. It's not that it would be harmful to them. It's just that they're not mature enough to sort of balance all the things mm-hmm. that they have to do in life. And the most important thing is get those grades up, get into college, get your life going. And then people of unsound mental health, if they've ever had a psychiatric history, they should not do any remote viewing ever by anyone. And the reason is one of the problems, say, with people who have had psychiatric histories is they have delusions. And we don't want people with histories of psychiatric illness to start thinking that remote viewing is verifying their delusions. If they have a history of psychiatric illness, they should be going to their doctor on a regular basis and staying healthy and managing their life's chores, managing their life's works, growing, staying with their families and stuff like that. And remote viewing is not something they should be participating in. However, for everyone else who has a normal, healthy psychology, it's a huge adventure into growth, awareness, and a spectacular area of personal growth and also academic, scientific interest.
Something like this could really change your life. I mean,
absolutely.
It really could. That's a good. I'm glad you explained the disclaimers there. Ruthanie, did you have other questions
Basically, I was just looking at the sections, you know, on that page. And I think, though, what I got altogether from that was, putting that all together, it was very interesting to me that in that, instead of, you know, one application, this is going to, when this becomes the mainstream that it should be, I mean, there are some things that are laughed at and turn out not to be legitimate, but those are things that aren't legitimate. And this is a totally different, this is a totally different type of procedure, and it's not just somebody sitting in his or her living room and just having a good time and playing. This is serious, and it's controlled, and there is data to back it up. And so, you know, this is a totally different thing. And I think that when you know, that when this becomes the mainstream topic that it should be, that these applications that I can see could really change so many lives will come into mainstream use, and I can see it changing so many areas of our society. And I'm just glad to know that I believe that will happen. So
it brings a bit of hope in the future, and to know that, you know, we can kind of expand past our what we perceive sort of our mundane reality. I mean, there's so much lately. To me, the most exciting scientific advances and metaphysical advances have not been, well, specifically, I guess, scientific advances have not been in our technology. They've been more in how we understand consciousness and how the mind works and how much a lot of metaphysics is getting more mainstream attention and some validation. And
actually,
and Courtney, you're leading the way. And I mean, that's not your charge exactly, but this is a big thing. I mean, this is a wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're validating all of metaphysics. What I'm saying is that your work has been instrumental in really expanding science into the next dimension of human existence, not just building faster processors. You know,
I understand. Actually, this is a really important point, because that moment, that delicious moment, when significant elements of mainstream science do recognize the reality of remote viewing, which is inevitable. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. That moment is going to be so delicious, because it will usher in a entire new age of scientific awareness in all fields. For example, in physics, when we're doing remote viewing, we are transferring information across time and space, in complete violation of both classical and relativistic laws of physics. So those laws are incomplete. That means they define a realm of reality that's bordered, that has limitations, and there's a much greater reality that exists beyond it. Now, physicists understand that information is physical. It's not just stuff that you know. For example, if you have a system, an isolated system, and this has experimentally been confirmed. It's been around with regard to theory since the work of Rolf Landauer. But experimentally, they've also confirmed this, that when you have an isolated system that has information in it and you destroy the information, you release energy, heat. So mm-hmm. energy and information is energy. So when we're transferring information across time and space, we're transferring energy. And remember, E equals mc squared. So energy equals mass. So we're transferring essentially mass across time and space. And so when we talk about this, we're talking about ushering in a complete new realm of physics that will include the realm of transportation. So that's why remote viewing is sort of linked to what will inevitably be a recognition of life outside of Earth. UFOs, you know, spaceships, flying saucers. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that once you recognize the reality of remote viewing, you realize that you are transferring instantaneously information across time and space. That means it must be technologically possible to do the same thing with physical objects. It must be, because we do know that information and energy are equivalent, and E equals mc squared. Mass is equivalent. Different forms are the same thing. So that is going to enter in not only a new realm of physics, but a new realm of technology. In addition, even go to the social sciences. This means that we're going to be able to explore the past versions of ourselves. Notice I used the plural. The future versions of ourselves. Notice I'm using the plural. And the other realm or multiple universe or parallel universes of ourselves. That means we're talking about an advance in the social sciences, where we're not simply talking about mundane issues of war and peace here on Earth right now as we see it, but we're talking about a reevaluation of, say, the 20th century, where a real, just as real as our remembered version of the 20th century existed, but none of the major wars occurred. None. And then there's another version of the 20th century in which World War II ended with nuclear destruction. So we're going to see that there's an entire realm of uses out there, an entire realm of civilizations, not just off planet, but within our civilization, different other versions of ourselves. And we will eventually be able to communicate across dimensions so we can actually talk to our other versions of ourselves using technology. So all of this is in the works. It all starts with the dam breaking, with the public and mainstream scientific recognition of the reality of remote viewing. So that's why this is such a delicious, pregnant moment.
We're close, very close. I think right on the edge. We're gonna have to take a break here. When we get back, we're gonna talk about Mars. A lot of attention in the media lately about Mars and curiosity. We have some curiosity about what you found on Mars, so we'll pick that up on after the break. We'll be back in a moment with Courtney Brown.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system, and Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as La Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's alabamareiki.com.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415.
8415. And welcome back. We have Courtney Brown with us tonight, and we are learning so much about remote viewing as we do every time Courtney is with us. Now, I've been leading up the whole episode about what Courtney and his team have found about Mars, and there's been a lot of attention about Mars lately. Now, we have a probe up there that is currently looking around and seeing some pretty interesting things. But Courtney's work has definitely seen some interesting things regarding Mars, too. So, Courtney, if you'd like to kind of go into that and tell us a little bit about what you've discovered.
Sure. On the issue of the current probe on Mars, that's a very interesting thing. The reason it's so interesting is not what the mainstream science wants to project. I actually have a great deal of fun watching the dances that mainstream science does around issues like Mars. The amount of information that is suppressed by the mainstream science and NASA in particular on issues such as extraterrestrial life and life on Mars, past life on Mars, and current residual life on Mars is amazing. And I actually enjoy watching the dance around it. And the current probe, from my perspective, is a very well orchestrated a show that is designed to introduce to the masses the idea that microbial life on Mars exists. So I'm expecting sometime this year. I could be wrong. It depends on how they do it. Their upper-ups make decisions. But I'm expecting sometime this year for them to announce that this new probe has confirmed that there is microbial life on Mars. Mm-hmm. And there is not a single agenda of the government or the government's scientific puppets. There's not a single agenda from any one of these groups. They have multiple agendas. And one group believes that this slow introductory process is what's needed. But I think they're actually going to be cut off in midstream. I don't think they're actually going to be able to complete their Broadway production as they envisioned it, which is a slow exposure of microbial life and then dancing on to other things. They know full well there was a huge civilization on Mars in the distant past and that there's plenty of records of it on the current surface. Anyway, let's get to our particular project.
I definitely agree with you. This is a, yeah. I think we're being introduced to the idea very slowly
It's an orchestrated mm-hmm. thing, and they're yeah. going
to... Got to build us up to it, you know.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to build us up to it. And so this, there was, they have a lot of imagery that's come out from the various probes that they've sent to Mars over the years. And a great deal of it is tampered with so that you can, there's huge evidence on it of this, but a great deal of it is tampered with so you can't see the, some of the sensitive spots. But they miss things. Some things they just don't get. And a lot of these discoveries are made on the internet by independents. For example, one of the most interesting websites is www.marsanomalyresearch.com. That's run by a guy called Patrick Skipper. And he was the one who discovered this thing that NASA people actually missed. Now, mind you, the NASA is the one who collects the data, and then they ship it out to Malin Space Science Systems for processing, which is a private firm. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is simply that's the process that they do, but it also insulates NASA a bit because they themselves are not releasing this information. So at any rate, one of the images that they had from NASA images from the Mars Observer that was a NASA JPL Malin Space Science Systems image was an extremely high-resolution picture of the surface of Mars showing a spray. Now, this spray was a horizontal spray of liquid coming out of a long nozzle or pipe, straight pipe. Now, we know of no geological processes that can do that. We do know that there are sprays on Earth and they eject vertically, such as Old Faithful. But we know of no geological processes that produce a horizontal spray, a nozzle, a pipeline going into a dome. And that's what the picture clearly says. And there's even a shadow under the spray so you can really see it. And the resolution is uncannily good. I mean, it's just really, really clear. Now, I am not saying, be very clear about that, I am not saying that Malin Space Science Systems or JPL or NASA are purposely, lying. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the images that we often get from that are publicly released often have evidence that I consider to have been tampered, that I consider to have been, changed in some way to hide certain things. Now, I'm not saying that those groups have actually done it. I'm being very clear on this for legal reasons. But I do want to say that at some time, at some point, no matter how it does, somebody does it. And when these, but they're in, they're not very good at covering up absolutely everything. And this is one of those things that apparently squeaked through. And, if you look at this high resolution image, and again, I'm not saying, you know, who let this thing through or who does the covering up, but at some point, some of these, most of these things are tampered with. But sometimes this is a good example of one that got through. And when I saw the spray, I said, oh, this is just too good. So when we were doing other projects at the Forest Site Institute, I said, well, when we have a break, I'm going to slip this one in. So I assigned this sort of area on Mars with the spray, the dome, and another larger dome, two remote viewers, and these are the best remote viewers on the planet Earth, working with these procedures for a decade or more, under trained guidance from people like Glenn Wheaton and Lynn Buchanan, these military-developed procedures or procedures that are derived of those methodologies. So these are the best there are, and they went and looked under totally blind conditions, meaning they knew nothing about the target when they did these sessions. That's how remote viewing is done. And they came in with immaculate descriptions of everything that we saw in the picture, which was great. Mm. They described the spray, the chemical composition of the spray, the nozzle that it was ejecting under pressure, the pipeline that fed into the dome, and so on. But being remote viewers as they are, and they had not been given any esoteric targets like this in the years that we had been working with them, so they had always been given like Earth-based targets of Macy's Day Parade, landing of a space shuttle, a tornado through Mino, Arkansas, stuff like that. So they were not expecting something like this from us. But when they gave the targets, when they got to the sessions, they described everything that we saw in the picture, which was really good. And these aren't vague, foggy, fuzzy descriptions. These are trained people that know how to do these methodologies well. These are very clear and explicit descriptions, like they're standing there and watching it and telling you what's there. And that was really good to get that validation from the remote viewers of what we were seeing. But then they saw the domes, of course, when they were there, and they went into the domes. They poked their nose. That's what they're trained to do. They're trained to go to a location under totally blind conditions, mm-hmm. not being told anything about the targets, and then to investigate whatever's at those locations. And they saw the domes, and they said, well, what's that? And they go into it to find out. And they found out what was in the domes. And that's what's so absolutely fascinating, because what's in the domes is a currently inhabited facility by humans or humanoids, at least, you can't call it a structure because it's a connected group of structures underground in Mars. And it's absolutely fascinating. They found out everything. They found out what the people were doing, what they were wearing, what their break time was like, the nature of the post, the entire outlook, structure of the facilities, and how it was buried underground and so on. The facility itself is apparently extremely ancient. And the people who are there now operating the facility are not the people who built it. And interestingly, it's almost comical, the people that are there don't fully appreciate that it's not theirs.
Oh, wow.
So imagine.
Well, it sounds like humans, actually.
It's so much like us. But, yeah. The interesting thing about this facility here and the way that these people are operating it is that they're there as a result of volunteering for a hardship post. It's not easy for them. Wherever they came from, they don't have a guarantee of being able to get back to it. Hmm. And so it's really it's a job for them, but it's a job with some risk associated with it. Now, I have talked with Lynn Buchanan and Glenn Wheaton about this, and they've emphasized emphatically that there is nothing in these data, and there's a lot of data, that says that these people are extraterrestrial. And it's true. None of the remote viewers say these people are extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. However, they don't not say it either. And my personal interpretation is that these are extraterrestrials. However, both Glenn and Lynn have said, you know, it could be they're humans from Earth on some secret project that we're simply not told about. But my personal view is that they're extraterrestrial. And
I think
again,
it would be better if they were not extraterrestrial. I think it'd be better if they were extraterrestrial, because if they were not, then that implies a level of secrecy about something quite important that we really shouldn't have, I feel. Humans should be involved in that, since it's our future.
If
that's the case, you know, if it's extraterrestrials, then that's,
they can
do as they wish, you know.
One of the things I do want to mention is that when people hear of projects like this, we're only skimming the surface of a huge project. And a lot of people, when they come to our website or hear me talk, they say, this is like so much information. The people get overwhelmed. And so what we've done, we did something unusual this year that we normally have never done before. And that is, we put out a DVD. We mostly put everything up just for free on the website. But this time we said, no, people need something extra. So we have a DVD called The Farsight Experiments, Volume 1. And it covers all of the major projects that we've done at the Institute up through last year, 2011. And it also includes this Mars project and also the post-2012 Earth Changes project. And it ties it all together. And it's called, you can find it on our homepage at farsight.org, www.farsight.org. Again, it's The Farsight Experiments. And so for those listeners who really want to hear the details of this base on Mars and our other projects as well, that's really the place to go. It's specially designed to literally let you hit the ground running and say, after one sort of movie presentation, say, okay, I get it. I get what you're doing. And now, and then they can sort of dive into some of the other stuff. But anyway, that's what I really recommend as sort of a way to start.
Well, definitely people should, and we're going to link to this DVD. I just found the link on your site. I think we mentioned it last time too. But this is definitely something that people should check out. We just don't have the time to go into everything that you found, but definitely people should get this and explore your work further. Courtney, we're out of time. I wish we had 4 more hours and we
yes.
could discuss everything, but we just don't. But thank you very much for coming. And we've discussed off the air that we can look forward to you coming back soon and maybe
yes.
talk a little bit more about information delivery and teleportation and as in regards to the remote viewing framework and all sorts of exciting topics like that. So we look forward to that. But thank you for giving us your time tonight.
Yes, thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Okay, well, everyone, appreciate it listening. I want to remind everybody about our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You can also search us out on iTunes, Well Rounded Corners. You can grab every episode. We put them out there. They'll automatically download to your iPhone, iPod, iPad, anything with an I in front of it. And you can also listen to us on the website, download the MP3. You can save it. Feel free to share the MP3s. Just share them in your entirety. They're completely free. All of our archives are free. You can also catch us every other week, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Channel 1. Till next time, you have a great evening.
Take care.